it's Pearl a Day, and you're listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we are at the backstage, Culver City's finest dive bar.
Are you kidding me? We're coming from a dive bar, and we have Pearl a Day here.
It's called The Backstage.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's been around for 75 years, and her story is called Backstage. So what do you want from me?
Okay, fair enough. I hear what you're saying. And you know what? There's a rock star in my house as we speak, Hannes. And so the fact that her story is called Backstage is like so, it's so titillating, isn't it?
Titillating.
No, but I mean, obviously we want to talk about her music. We want to talk about her life and her talents.
But it's rock and roll. We want to hear dirty, dirty stories.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Filthy, horrible things that people have done. People, you know, doing cocaine off of a buffet.
Well,
you know, perhaps messing with a shrimp. I don't know.
Whoa, I haven't heard any of those stories at all.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That was only in comedy clubs when they would pay you in cocaine instead of...
That's what Rick Overton talked about.
Yeah,
that.
He got cocaine instead of money. I never did the cocaine because I'm a big wuss. But every comedy club I went to in the 80s, they'd all have glass and chrome tables,
right?
Like everybody did. But in between the cracks of all the tables was a fine white powder.
Of powder, right.
Just residual cocaine on all the furniture.
I had a very short cocaine period in my life. 2 or 3 years. But I remember this guy used to
It was actually a month, but it seemed like...
This guy I did coke with, he would snort cocaine. We would snort cocaine off his grandmother's picture. And then I remember thinking, like, this isn't that cool after all. Do you know what I mean?
Right. That is not a hip way to...
Well, it's just sort of depressing when you think about it. And honestly, the way, I'm going way back in time, but the way I realized that cocaine wasn't really the way to go was because I was a waitress at the time, and a gram of cocaine was about $120. And I remember thinking after 2 nights of waitressing, Friday and a Saturday night, I bought, you know, 2 grams of cocaine. And then I remember seeing in the store a VCR at the time, and it was $240. And I said to myself, I could have either worked for that VCR or those 2 days I didn't sleep. Do you know what I mean? And I did the math, and then I didn't do cocaine anymore.
Wow, so the VCR cured your cocaine habit. I've never heard this before,
1985,
ever.
1985, Liz.
It had the thing where you put it in, and it would go down, and it's like, you're like, you know, some cocaine would make this process easier to manage.
Now, Pearl a Day is here, and she is a rock star. I don't know.
I'm not accusing her of any cocaine
use. She doesn't look like that kind of rock star.
She looks like that healthy, vegan kind of rock star, put together,
smart rock star, and that's therefore why she continues to do what she does.
Yeah, show business has changed. Like comedians, you know, comedians used to look like coked out guys who would always sleep with the waitresses at the comedy clubs, and now they're all like in health clubs, and you know they're drinking like the super green stuff,
and they're still sleeping with the cocktail waitresses at the comedy club.
But at least they're better looking.
Yeah, thank God. Hey, before we go any further, I did want to mention, folks, that the Story Worthy podcast—that's us. That's what you're listening to.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we are an official selection at the LA Pod Fest, which is happening October 4th through the 6th in Santa Monica. For more information, including the other podcasts that'll be there, and hotel information, you can go to lapodfest.com, and then that's where you get the information.
That is where you get the information, and there will not be any cocaine at the LA Pod Fest.
That's debatable.
That is hard to guarantee. It is taking place in a hotel in Santa Monica.
But they're podcast
There will be homeless
fans.
People.
Well, that's a
Absolutely.
Guarantee. That's yes. a guarantee. All right. So backstage, that's the topic of the night. And so I'm anxious to hear her story about backstage. But I have to say, I have been a rock
yeah,
music fan.
Yeah, we were going to talk about you because I was never a big rock person. I went to one concert in my whole life.
That's not true.
Before I was like 25 years old, I only went to one concert. It was Head East, Northern Illinois. Classic rock band.
I think that you made that up.
No.
I don't believe
they
you.
They have a Wikipedia page. I just looked it up. They do exist. It's called.
So you're claiming that that's the concert.
1978. I'm going to say
that's your
LA
concert.
The Milwaukee Auditorium.
God's sakes.
And yeah.
That's a nightmare right
that
there.
That was enough to make me go, you know, I didn't do drugs even as a kid, so
well,
going to a concert
good to know.
Is completely pointless. Well, if you didn't smoke pot or drink beer, why were you going to a concert?
Well, no, I know. Well, there's something music, Hannes. The music. Hello? Listen,
right,
I...
Right, that's word off. Tell me more about your musical taste.
Well, thanks for that lead-in, Hannes.
You know, they call me Mr. Natural.
You know, growing up in my house, okay, I had four older sisters, and they loved Bobby Sherman, Neil Diamond,
yeah.
The Beach Boys, and, of course, the Beatles. And that music, of course, was okay, but there was no grit to it. You know what I mean? It was pop. And even when I was 8 years old, I remember thinking, this is pop. There's got to be more than this. But then my brother Scotty, he got himself a stereo with his paper route money. It was a Panasonic stereo. It had an AM/FM radio, had a turntable, had an 8-track player and a cassette player. So it like did everything. And I would go into his bedroom. He was the only one with his own room because he was the only boy. And he would be kicking Led Zeppelin, of course.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones. And I thought, okay, now we're talking some rock music. And then he listened to Boston and Peter Frampton and those sorts of bands. More pop. But
did he ever listen to Head East? I'm just curious.
But I'll tell you what, his major influence on me was Neil Young. And my brother, not only did he have the Harvest album, Comes a Time After the Gold Rush, Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere, but he had Russ Never Sleeps. And Hannes, I don't know if you're familiar with the Russ Never Sleeps album.
I saw the concert film of Russ Never Sleeps.
Well, good for you. That was good. It is a good concert film.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and I remember hearing the song "Hey Hey My My" for the first time,
mm-hmm.
And then on the flip side was "My My Hey Hey," and for some reason,
whoa,
the electronic version and the acoustic version, and I thought like, this means something. You know what I mean? Like, he was saying something about doing two different versions of the same song. I mean, he...
Well, we're back to the cocaine now.
Listen, Hannes.
I have the greatest idea in the world. Listen, 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 listen. Well, the same song backwards.
To this day, Neil Young holds up. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
No, that's absolutely true.
Last year, he came out with Psychedelic Pill, and it's a fantastic album. Then, as I got older... I liked the boys that were into rock bands. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like the athletes in school. I liked the boys that liked the bands.
Ah, I see.
So Robbie Carroll loved Van Halen. So, that, of course, then
Robbie
I loved
Carroll,
Van Halen.
That prick.
And then Jim Murhut, he loved Kiss. So, of course, I loved Kiss.
Fucker still owes me $10, and I never even met him.
Not only Kiss Alive, but Kiss Alive 2, and then all the solo albums. You remember, Hannes? Ace Frehley, Paul Stanley, Peter Criss, their faces, Gene Simmons, they were on the album. They were on the vinyl. It was, you lose your mind. It was so fantastic.
I know. By the way, I'm sorry, I just have to insert this. Paul Stanley, the other day at Universal Studios Hollywood, the entertainment capital of L.A., took a picture of his kid with Curious George. I helped. That's right.
It's so L.A., isn't it?
It's very L.A. Please continue with your story.
Well, no, it's just that's what got me really into rock music. I got my first guitar at 12. I learned how to tune it at 18.
Yeah, there you go.
No, because then...
And someday you'll be able to play.
No, but then, back then, we only had a pitch pipe. We didn't have, like, now there's an app on the phone to tune your guitar. It's a no-brainer.
God,
you just go to the app.
Today.
But then we were like, ooh, and, you know,
I remember seeing that and thinking, what kind of, you know, chemistry, what kind of mysticism is this to try and, because I don't know anything about music. I have no musical bones in my body. So they go, woo, and hit the piano and they tune in, woo, hit the piano. It all sounded exactly the same to me.
Is that true?
I have no concept of pitch.
I took harmony and theory in high school and there was this kid, John Shulo. Shut up, honest.
John Shulo.
He had
give me a hand job once.
He had perfect pitch. So you say to this kid, give me a D sharp, and he could do that. You know what I mean? B flat, he'd do that.
Yeah, but since almost no one has perfect pitch, he could say anything. He'd be like, okay, who wants to dispute him? You don't have perfect pitch.
He went to Juilliard and is a concert pianist. Could you stay with me here, Hannes, please?
Pianist.
Now, as I got older, I didn't go the metal route. I didn't do that route. I went the Gin Blossoms, Counting Crows, Wallflowers.
Oh, you didn't go the glamour rock.
Dave Matthews route, exactly. In fact, recently I was in a car with Matt Oswalt here, and I had Dave Matthews playing. Now, it was Dave Matthews' album from last year, I'll say that.
That really doesn't matter.
But
I'm sure
Matt
it sounds like every
me,
other album he ever put
exactly.
out.
Exactly. So Matt says to me, you are a chick of the 90s. And I say, so maybe I am. You know what I mean? Well, I can't argue that.
And then you threw him out of your Subaru wagon.
Boy, boy, you honest, way to just push my face right in the dirt.
No, I'm just saying, that's a very 90s car.
Listen, growing up in Pittsburgh, as where I grew up, going to concerts was huge. You know, you waited for your favorite band to come. They only came, you know, during the summer, and it would be, you'd wait for 8 months to see somebody live. It was a big deal.
Yeah, that's true.
And now living in LA, of course, there's great music all over the place. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say about music. My favorite venue in LA, by the way, House of Blues. Your favorite venue?
I like the Greek Theater better than the Hollywood Bowl because it's much, much smaller and much more intimate.
Well,
I saw the greatest double bill I've ever seen. This is at least 5 or 6 years ago. Michael McDonald. That's my terrible Michael McDonald
impression.
I could
totally get into that.
And he was opening for James Brown.
Wow, that is a good
show. I was like, this is, I don't know anything about music, but I know that this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And a white man who never moves from the piano,
yeah,
opening for the guy who can't stop moving.
James Brown, I saw him at the Greek, and I loved his bit where at the end he would like go into like a kind of
Wait
like
a minute. You were at the same concert. I remember this.
Where
we ran into you.
Well, perhaps we did. I don't remember.
Yeah, you were high as a kite, of course. So you
Point
were like,
is that he...
you're like, I'm going to blow my way down to the good seats or something like that. I don't recall exactly how you were getting into the
I
concert.
I used to be a huge scalper, as
you were
know.
The scalping queen,
huge
it's
scalping
true.
Queen.
Yeah, he was, but what were you saying about James Brown? Because he was
well,
amazing.
Just that
he was
I love the part at the end of his show where he'd say, you know, I can't do no more. Can't do no
oh, right,
more.
Oh, right, right. I can't do it. And he'd go off and the guy like put the shawl over his shoulders.
Like a,
I can't.
It wasn't a shawl. It was a cape.
It was a cape. I'm sorry. It was a cape.
Jesus.
I thought it was a shmata. He put a thing on his head. He's like, I can't do it anymore.
And then,
who wants some soup?
And he would come back.
All right,
on.
I'll come back.
And it was just, and then he'd be like revised, right? He would go from like a shrinking man,
yep,
and then he'd revive, and then he'd fucking tear the roof off the place. And that was amazing because there is no roof on the Greek.
And he was like 75 years old at the time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a great storyteller here tonight and a great musician. She's going to be playing a song for us with her partner, Jim Wilson. So please, wherever you are, stay around because Pearl A Day is on her way here. Next week on Storyworthy, we have comedian Graham Elwood.
Talking about going and doing comedy shows in Iraq.
Next week on Storyworthy. We're back. We're actually out in front of the backstage right now because everyone wanted to get a cigarette because we were talking about rock and roll and you can't smoke indoors anymore. So we're like on the sidewalk and there's across the street is the Sony studio, formerly MGM many years ago.
You know, I have never been a cigarette smoker in my whole life, but I will always go to the smoking area. I enjoy that area. I like those people. I like that atmosphere. I like going out for a smoke with no smoke.
Ah, interesting. I do not enjoy the smoking because they're angry in the first place because they're full of nicotine, and now with that they've been herded into a certain spot like mongrels, they're really angry and bitter.
Listen, that depends because I was at a club recently in Hollywood and the outdoor smoking area was like twice as big as the indoor area because everybody went outside. Do you know what I mean?
I was at a club in Hollywood. Well, excuse me.
That is
me.
Pretty funny. Honest.
I went to Denny's in Burbank, so fuck you.
I went to my daughter's. Tomorrow morning, actually, Hannes, did I tell you my daughter has a little dance at school tomorrow morning? Uh-huh. She's doing the Mexican hat dance. And you know what she said to me today? She said, "Mama, you know how it goes." She goes, "It goes da na na da na na da na 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 da na da na da na da na 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 da na," and then she goes, "Mama, have you ever heard of sashaying?" And she starts, and she sashayed all the way across the floor. So
that's very cute.
It makes
course,
you cry. It's
as
so
always,
cute.
She will be the only blonde white girl in the entire class because
we're in Los Angeles.
We're
so
in
what?
Los Angeles, and she always looks like she just is visit. She's an exchange student from Sweden or something.
All right, you guys, we've got a storyteller here right now. Here she comes, Pearl A Day. She is a singer-songwriter whose debut album, Little Immaculate White Fox, in 2010 just rocked. I'm telling you, Hannes, I've been listening to this CD, And she starts off strong. She ends strong. It is a fantastic CD. Now, Pearl has appeared on numerous albums and in various tours, including as a backup singer in her dad Meatloaf's band for 9 years, and also as a backup singer for Motley Crue. Now, in addition, you may have seen her television appearances. She's been on Jimmy Kimmel Live, That Metal Show, and on VH1 Storytellers. And you can find her at cheersloverock.com and on Twitter, at Pearl A Day. So please, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Pearl A Day.
So here we go. Backstage, you can also call it the story of my evil ear. Okay, so I have the mark of the devil on me in a secret place, and there are 4 friends of mine whom share the same marking. A handful of years ago, my husband and I were invited to go see Van Halen play at a special friends and family closed show at the Forum in preparation for their upcoming world tour. Now, only about 1,500 people were allowed in to the otherwise empty arena, which made it even cooler and way more special. So we gathered a small group of friends and we rented a chauffeured van to take us. And our group was me, my husband, Scott Ian, who's in the band Anthrax, his best friend, Kirk Hammett, who's in Metallica, our friend Mark Asagueta of the band Death Angel, and our friend Brian Posehn of great, you know, comedy and acting fame, and also our friend Benj, who was there too. So all of us were like completely over the moon about getting to go see the show. It was like the most ridiculous thing. We were so excited. So we met at Kirk's hotel beforehand for drinks, of course, and we stocked our van with champagne for the ride. Once we got there, we just planned on sort of standing on the floor like everyone else, but we happened to know the front of house guy who invited us to come and stand on the little platform at the front of house so we could actually see over everyone's heads. And it was perfect because at the front of house, you're just far enough back to get the full view of the whole production, but still close enough to see the band's full, you know, their faces up close, you know, so not up close, but, you know, you can see them. So I'd never seen Van Halen live before, and I was like, what do you call it? Kvetching? No. What do you call it? I don't even know. I was like a kid on Christmas. Kvelling. Thank you. Knowing that I was going to get to see David Lee Roth for the first time, you know, doing his David Lee Roth thing. You know, I'd been a huge fan since I was a kid. So they started and it was amazing. Like perfect. Every song was a hit. One right after another. Complete, total crowd-pleasing set, like Unchained, Janie's Crying, Mean Streets, Ice Cream Man, Hot for Teacher, Dance the Night Away, Ain't Talking About Love, Panama Running with the Devil, Jump, Everybody Wants Some, like just every, like one after another was exhaustingly fantastic. And even though it wasn't an official show of the tour, we got like the full production and it was like a full dress rehearsal. David Lee changed his costumes and he came out with like the giant flags and he was waving them around and he had like swords that he was like doing spin kicks and kung fu or like karai, whatever he does. It was awesome. And the screen behind the stage, you know, it was like that mat, the entire back behind them was a massive screen. So you could see everyone up close. You could see Eddie's fingers. You could see everything. So now get to sort of the middle of the show. And I don't know if it was the fact that I was standing with 3 guitar players whom I know and love very much, or if it was just the drinks and the champagne working and the excitement of it. But Eddie Van Halen's guitar solo actually made me cry. It was like beyond. And I think usually like most everyone else, I usually use a guitar solo as like a pee break, a bar run, you know, a whatever, a smoke break, whatever. But I could not, I just stood there like in awe, and it was on, it was him, and then it was on that massive screen, and I just couldn't help but think that I was seeing something really, really special. Like, this is fleeting, and it's pure talent, and it's something, like, this is really special. You know, it reminded me of a story that my mom told me. She got to, a friend dragged her to this club in the 60s and said, you got to see this guitar player. His name's Jimi Hendrix or something. And she got to see this Jimi Hendrix play in a tiny little smoky club in San Francisco. So anyway, it wasn't that, but it reminded me of that. Like, you know, anyway. So let's see. The show was fantastic. We were all feeling fantastic. You know, we were full of booze and not too full to forget, to not remember. But, you know, people started filing out. And then by chance, Scott and Kirk saw the tour manager for Van Halen, who they knew. And so just like that, we were led to David Lee Roth's dressing room. Like, the tour manager says, come on in. David's waiting to hang out. And we were like, oh, okay, you know, and like, and once we walked in, we found that to be like extra true. Like, he really was actually waiting to hang out. So it was awesome. So those dressing rooms are like, they're locker rooms, essentially, in those venues. It's an arena, you know, they do sports and I don't know. It's sort of like, so the door opens and there's a little like run, like a little hallway. That you walk down, and we opened the door. He opened the door, and we walked in, and the lights were kind of low, and there were like flashing lights, and there were, you know those tube lights? You can buy them at the hardware store. They're like plastic tubes, and there are lights inside of them, the running along the tops and the bottoms of the hallway, and there were old movie posters up all over the walls, and disco music was playing, like full-on disco. And so we were like, this is fantastic. So we walked in, and as soon as we turn the corner, we see David Lee is sitting there on the couch all by himself, sitting there like this, all by himself, wearing an orange Van Halen crew jumpsuit, sitting there waiting. We turn the corner. He turns his head. He sees us in like perfect David Lee, like you would imagine, like in the Just a Gigolo video. And he turns and he smiles and he stands up and he's like, hey, guys, come on in. And he's like, good to see you. Did you like the show? Did you like the show? And he starts doing like this. And we were like, this is, oh my God, this is not real. This is not real. So, and he greeted each one of us separately, like shook hands, looked in our eyes, said hi, smile, like, how you doing tonight? You know, like, just, it was amazing. And so then he's like, come on in, let's hang out. So he brought it, like, he came over and he sat down in the middle of the couch where he was before. And he's like, sit down, let's have a drink. There were a few bottles of Jack Daniels on the coffee table, like a bunch of packs of Marlboro Lights, couple joints, and we sat down. He sat down in the middle of the couch. I sat down on the floor at his feet in front of the coffee table. So, like, coffee table's in front of the couch. I sat down sort of down like this, like I'm, you know, his... I don't know why I sat there, but that's where I sat. That's, I think, like where I wanted to be, at his feet or something. But, and then so other people kind of followed suit and sat on the floor around, so I didn't look like a total weirdo. But I was sitting there, and we just proceeded to like party like it was fucking high school. And I'm sitting on the floor at his feet, and for a while, like there were Jack Daniel's cigs, there was a cooler full of beer, and, you know, disco music. And at one point, there were no cups in the beginning, so David Lee, like, took a swig from the Jack Daniel's bottle and handed it to me to take some. And what am I going to say? No? So I'm like, God, like, right from his mouth to mine, I was, like, losing my mind, completely losing my mind. And then... So a couple more people started to come in from the crowd, and you know, the party started getting a little, it wasn't just our group anymore, which is cool. And then suddenly Eddie Van Halen walks in to congratulate David Lee on a great show. And then they have a hug, like a hug and a pat on the back moment. Hey, man, like great job, man. And everyone got like silent and stared. Like it was like a moment. Like they're hugging. Look at them. Look, it's Eddie. Look, it's both of them. So, and then as soon as they stopped, you know, and then everyone was like, bro, chat, chat, chat. And like, you know, music. And David Lee's sister came in. Her name is Allison. She was amazing. She sat next to me. I started talking with her. And so, I mean, that was, you know, it just went on for a few more hours until we decided to, like, David decided that it was, you know, okay, you know, it wasn't, it's time to go. So we're like 15 years old, you know, like running out of the arena, getting into our van. There's still some champagne left, which of course was consumed in like a split second. And we're all like, yeah, remember that part? Oh my God, remember the part? And we're like, yeah, we're like high-fiving. And then somebody yells out, let's get a group tattoo. And then we're all like, yeah. So, so I got on the phone. At the time, Kat Von D had just recently opened up her studio, and she was a friend of ours. And this was around the time when I knew that she was hanging out after hours at her salon a lot at the time. So I got on the phone and I called her and I said, we're coming over. Are you there? She goes, fucking bring it. So we went to Kat's shop and we walked right in and she's got her table in her office and then she's like, right on, guys. And we were like, oh my God, this is what just happened. And David Lee, and she was like, holy fuck. Okay, what do you want? And somebody goes, let's get 666. And we were like, yeah. Okay, so I don't know. God knows why we didn't get VH for Van Halen. But, you know, I'm with, you know, Anthrax guy, Metallica guy, Death Angel guy, you know. So 666 just sort of made sense. So then we just sort of like filed in a line and each of us went. Scott got his on his finger, like small. I got mine behind my ear because I was like, I'm totally getting it, but where can I get it that maybe will be like harder? My dad will see it like way later, and maybe he'll never see it. You know, and Mark, I think Mark got his really big in the center of his back or something, you know. So, yeah. So now I have 666 tattooed on me with the, you know, four other dudes.
Whatever you do. Never mind. Go ahead.
You do know that's the mark of the devil.
That's how I started my story.
Okay.
I learned that from The Omen, starring Gregory Peck.
Right. And so only 1,500 people. That must have been amazing.
It was awesome.
And they call that a friends and family show.
That's what it was called.
What I liked is that you're a pro. Your husband's a pro. These people are pros, and they're at the top of the game. And they're still, but there are people that they're like, oh my God, can you believe we're going to see these? I love that about show business, because everybody in show business really start out as a fan of show business, whatever aspect of it they like, and they remain that.
These
forever.
Guys are still fanboys, like hardcore fanboys. They
yeah,
still
like
get
right
like,
now, if you know, some, I don't know why my mind is blanking, but a movie star who's 30 years old meets Tom Hanks, he's going to be like, oh God, I just fucking met Tom Hanks. That's what's going to, and it's like yeah. That. And I like that about show business. There's
I was just thinking that you said that, because I would think people would think that you're familiar with being backstage. You're familiar with being around famous people and really talented musicians. And so that maybe this would just be another day in the park, but not when it's David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen together.
No, there are people who are, you know, special.
Iconic.
That make me lose my mind.
And but they have such a, those two guys have had such a tumultuous relationship over years.
Yeah,
and years.
So that hug moment was kind of really extra cool, I think.
Right.
It was
anybody
really nice.
Taking, was there cell phone photos then?
No, because we felt like we were already you know, accepted into the inner sanctum. We didn't want to start like snapping pictures.
That's not cool.
I thought that was a bit douchey. Yeah.
That is douchey.
But I love the idea that, and it makes sense to me. It's like people, you know, again, showbiz, it's, oh, it's glamorous and rock stars. Fucking David Lee Roth is just sitting there. Like, he's kind of like these supermodels. I was like, no one asked me out in high school because I was so pretty that guys were afraid of me. I don't know why they would talk like that. But what I'm saying is, who's a David Lee Roth and people of that caliber have to sit and, like, beg people to come up to them? Because nobody fucking wants to be the guy.
Everyone's
like,
afraid.
Hey, hi, guy.
You know, he was sitting there almost like he's waiting for his birthday party. Like, he's waiting for his friends to come.
There's actually a picture of me when I was 5 sitting at an empty table at, like, 9 a.m. with my birthday hat on and my dress.
Ready to go.
Waiting for the kids. Yeah,
and that's David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
And then you sat at his feet.
I just did. I don't know how I got there. It just happened.
Okay, right. Can I just say this? The thing I thought of when you said that is that Lauren Bacall, in her autobiography, described that when she would get together with Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, it would always end up that the women were sitting at Humphrey Bogart and Spencer Tracy's feet, which sounds terribly sexist, but it's like, I think I would sit there too. Like, fucking Humphrey Bogart and Spencer Tracy.
Right.
What the hell? When I'm going to, like, talk to these guys? Like, that's what it made me think of. So you're like Katharine Hepburn. that's what I'm saying.
Oh, I think it's interesting, the locker room reference, that backstage, these big venues, is like, it is the locker room.
Especially the Forum was built in the 70s or even the 60s. I think that's where the Lakers used to play at the Forum. It was at the Forum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an old arena.
Okay, and so Kat Von D, she's a model and a tattoo artist, and you knew her how?
Just through a mutual friend.
And so when you called her, what time was it?
I don't.
Must have been the middle of the night.
Remember, it was like 2 a.m. probably.
And I hope I don't wake up my tattoo artist. Oh wait, that's impossible.
I recently saw a picture of her. You know, she's fully tattooed, but I saw a picture of her where somebody did a rendering of her with no tattoos. And boy, oh boy, she looked naked.
I mean, she has a makeup line, and she does a cover, like a foundation makeup that's thick enough to cover up your tattoos for people who need to get, you know, go on job interviews and stuff like that. So she put it all over her body. And,
oh, she's so beautiful.
Isn't that cool?
In that photo. Yeah, it looked really.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
Different.
Yeah, she's really.
How many tattoos do you have right now?
7. 7. 7. But they're tiny.
Yeah,
and they're
I have
all
two,
like black
and, small.
And just words. I like words.
And what's around your wrist there? Is it Love Cheers Rock?
Cheers Love Rock.
Oh, I thought, okay, very good.
That's the Oreo.
And I like the name
of your
website.
In case you forgot the name of your website, you can look at your wrist and turn it around.
She didn't have to put .com, honey.
Yeah,
she knows
true.
That part.
Yeah. Okay, now, you don't have to tell us where the tattoo is because obviously you don't want to tell us.
No, she did, behind the ear. The 666.
Oh, I was, okay. I was, I was drunk then. Oh, okay.
That's a sexy tattoo.
That is just like in The Omen. Oh, my God. We're all going to die.
Now, listen, you have a new baby boy. He's almost 2 years old.
Yes.
Revel.
Yes.
R-E-V-E-L.
Sure, his name isn't Damien?
Yes, like revel in the moment.
I love that. Yeah. And is that how you thought of it, revel in the moment?
Yeah, I just liked it as a vocabulary word. I like what it means.
Who chose the name, you or your husband?
I thought of it. I was pregnant. I was at home. He was on the road, and I was just thinking a lot.
Your
being
husband
nauseous and thinking a lot.
So. Right. Your husband Scott Ian.
Yes.
And he's with the band Anthrax.
Yes.
And that band was named after disease. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
No, Anthrax is a poison.
No, I know.
It's cow disease.
In fact, they had an album out called Spreading the Disease. I think they had an album, Spreading the Disease.
Yeah, because I think the story is he learned about it in history in high school, and he, you know, the cattle disease, he thought that it was a good name for
not
a metal
mad
band.
Cow. You're not talking about Mad Cow.
It's not, is it?
No,
it's not Mad Cow. It's different, but it was a cattle
disease, I believe.
Yeah,
but that doesn't sound nearly as good for a rock band, Hannes. The Hoof and
Mouth.
I don't know.
I would buy an album from a guy. What's the name of your band? Hoof and Mouth Disease.
Okay.
Yes, I like it.
Now I have to ask you. You were named after Janis Joplin.
Yes.
And doesn't that makes you feel good? Doesn't it? I mean,
I love my name. Yeah.
Yeah. I named my daughter Alabama, and I'm hoping that she loves her name for life because it is sort of a name like Pearl. It stands alone.
It's great. Alabama's a great name.
Thanks. Yeah. I tell her I named her after a Neil Young song, which is, you know, Alabama. But really, I named her after the hooker in True Romance, but it doesn't sound as good.
Oh, Alabama Whirly.
Yeah. But that doesn't sound as good.
I love that movie.
You know, because
I would like
to
point out again, as the guy whose name was never on a fucking license plate at an amusement park ever,
honest,
that everybody should be named Bob or Jan. Okay.
You're preaching to the choir. Yeah. Pearl was never, I was never on those things. Like Bobby and Katie and.
Yeah. Bort. Bort license plates. Anybody? Simpsons? Anybody? Never mind.
So listen, I've been listening. I've listened to Little Immaculate White Fox. And that album, I have to tell you. I don't have to tell you. You know. I mean, it is hard-hitting. It is visceral. It is like you feel it.
It gives the white fox its due.
Well, I want to see you
white
live.
Foxes.
I mean,
I
want
those
to
cocksuckers.
See you. I hear the music on, you know, and then I want to be there.
Cool.
Right. So we're going to hear from you in just a minute, which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Good. I wrote down some books because I love rock books, and I was just wondering if you read any of these books.
Oh, boy.
Did you read Motley Crue's The Dirt?
I was actually on the road with them when that was being written.
That is some crazy.
I wasn't
shit.
On the road with them when those things were happening, but I was on the road with them when Neil Strauss was out collecting stories to write the book.
And at that time,
so I heard the stories. I didn't have to read the book. I wasn't there for the stories, but I heard the stories.
Isn't it true that Motley Crue almost did like a therapy together as a band? And that's where a lot of these stories came out of.
I don't know about that. I don't know. I know Metallica did therapy as a band.
Wow.
I don't know if Motley did that.
And so you meet these guys, they're just regular guys. They just happen to have these extraordinary talents.
Who?
All these metal guys. I mean, they have extraordinary talent.
Some of them aren't regular guys. A lot of them are regular guys, but some of them aren't. You know, it depends.
Well, tell us about the ones that aren't. God! We don't give a shit about the guy who's like, you know, I like to play rock and then go home and play with my kids. Well, fuck you. That's not what I want out of my rock and roll. Come on, tell us a terrible story. You don't have to give us a name. Just tell us the worst story you've ever heard about a
person. I don't know.
Terrible
well,
story.
You've lived it and you know it. Okay, let me ask you this. Did you read The Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx?
I didn't. I didn't get to read that.
I didn't read that one yet, but I'll tell you one I read that I loved, which was Mary Wyland's Fall to Pieces. Mary Wyland with her husband, Scott Wyland, from the Stone Temple Pilots.
That would be good.
That's a terrific story. They met. She was only 15 down in Coronado Island, south of San Diego or in San Diego. And she was so young. She was a model, and Scott was the driver for the models. He, like, drove models around to their auditions and stuff. And so he
picked her
up. Is that
what the kids called it in those days?
No. all right. How about the new movie? Well, it's not new now, but Keith Richards, Life. Did you read that?
Actually, my husband gave that to me for Christmas when our baby was an infant. So the answer is no, I didn't get to read it, but it's sitting on my bookshelf.
You know, time
That's
really.
It's a very cool cover.
Time frees up as a mother. Like in the beginning, when the babies are one, two, three, it's very consuming. But then it starts.
It's like boot camp.
It is. And then it starts freeing up. And then what happens is then the baby, then it slips away. Like one day you don't. You push a stroller for 3-4 years. You think I'm going to push a stroller for the rest of my goddamn life. Then all of a sudden, you sell the stroller and you never push another stroller. I mean, I'm just saying.
No, it's true.
It's unbelievable.
You spend a lot of time wishing you had more free time and then suddenly you have free time and
it's
you're
gone.
Like, I'm such an asshole.
Then you have this car seat. Then you get a different car seat. Then you have no car seat.
Yeah, it's a lot of waste, isn't it?
Well, as they say, then the baby turns 17 or 18 and then the idea of the parent is that you're supposed to step aside and say, continue on your path. And then they're not in your life.
No, thanks.
Isn't that scary?
Yeah, it's terrifying. I'm looking at preschools. So the prospect of me leaving my child in somebody else's care, I can't sleep at night.
You know who's good with kids? Keith Richards. I hear that he likes to babysit.
His
so
kids are
wanna...
pretty fantastic, though.
Kids,
right?
Kids are
actually,
a lot of
but
fun.
Their mom is awesome. So
yeah.
That's
yeah. Okay, let's go to... Favorite rock movie? Did you like The Doors movie?
I love The Doors movie.
Yeah,
I was in high school when that came out, and we watched that, I think, like 50 million times.
It was so good.
Yeah.
And then Almost Famous.
Almost Famous, I love.
Because you remind me so much of Kate Hudson in that role.
I actually auditioned for that role.
You look so much, I mean.
But I'm not an actor.
Well, but I'm just saying your persona.
Well, neither is she.
Now, also, well.
Oh, I think she's great.
Well, also, Kate Hudson was playing like a hanger-on. She was playing a groupie. She wasn't. She
they're
wasn't
called Band-Aids.
The Band-Aids, exactly. But she wasn't
seen
talent.
It a few times.
Your talent. But your look, but you do, but your look, it just reminds me.
My hair used to be very, very curly mm-hmm. and blonde, and but I had a baby and now it doesn't curl anymore.
Did the curls really go away on their own?
Yeah.
Yeah. My curls went away too.
Yeah. He ate my brain and my curls and my boobs a little bit. So
yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
What about your favorite female performers? If I throw out, I know. Listen, let me just hear one word about these.
No, I sigh because it's so hard.
I know, but let me just say this. Chrissy Hynde. I mean, what
amazing.
Can
I just tell you a quick little story?
Please.
We were at the Classic Rock Awards in London. I think it was. Oh, and I was presenting an award to Chickenfoot. Do you know mm-hmm. the band?
Yeah,
Chickenfoot?
I do actually.
I was presenting an award to Chickenfoot, and the Classic Rock Awards are ridiculous because it was like Jimmy Page, Steven Tyler, Tony Iommi, Iggy Pop, Slash, you know.
They're all there.
Joan Jett, you know. And so I had presented an award, and then you're supposed to go. I presented an award with Glenn Hughes.
Glenn Beck?
Glenn Beck was there. No. He was there too.
Oh, Glenn Beck, did I?
Jeff Beck was there.
Jeff Beck, yeah, I know.
Jeff Beck.
One of the Becks.
Oh, my God, that's mommy brain. So you come off the stage and you're ushered into this room where they take a picture of you. And I just happened to walk into the picture room when, like, all of those humans were in the picture room in this very close vicinity.
Crazy.
At the same time. And I'm standing there with Scott, with my husband. He's next to me, and I'm just staring, like, with a mouth, like, my chin dropped to the floor. And I take a step back because it's getting crowded, and I bumped into somebody, and I turned around to say, oh, excuse me, and it was Chrissy Hynde.
Oh.
And I burst into tears.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Oh,
it was
wow.
too much. It yeah. was too much.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, within arm's reach is Iggy Pop and all those people. Yeah. And she goes, no worries, love. And I was like, oh, my God, no worries, love.
Two posters.
She called me love.
Yeah, I had two posters in college, and one was Chrissy Hynde, Get Close. I love that.
Oh, my God. It freaked me out.
Yeah. Okay, Joan Jett is another name I have here.
She freaked me out, too. She's so tiny.
Yo, is that right?
I didn't know she was so tiny. She's
How about
tiny.
Pat Benatar? She did a lot.
Oh, my God. I have tickets to go see her at the Greek.
Is that right?
Coming up.
How about Alanis Morissette?
I think she's rad.
She put that song, that album out, Jagged Little Pill. I think she was 19 or 20.
She was wasn't she a Canadian pop star
yes.
before that? And then she got with Glenn Ballard.
Do you
Ballard
know who the song was about?
No, who?
The famous song with the She's So
yeah.
Mad at the Guy.
You ought to know.
Wasn't it the guy from You Can't Do That on Television?
No, it was the guy from Full House. Dave Coulier.
Yeah. He was on You Can't Do That on Television.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
That is some crazy trivia coming out of you, Hannes Finney. Wow.
Well, that's the kind of trivia that I enjoy.
Rock
Something that involves
on,
a sitcom which is now unwatchable.
How about Stevie Nicks?
I just saw Fleetwood Mac at the Hollywood Bowl.
Amazing.
She sang Landslide with just Lindsay playing the guitar, and Melanie Truitt, Brian Posehn's wife, were bawling.
I would have too. I can't even imagine being there.
It was that because now we're both mothers, and that line of time makes you bolder, even children get older, and I'm getting older too. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. What about Lucinda Williams?
I she's awesome.
She's got that bluesy quality that
she's
I love
a rough,
so much.
Rough lady. She's rad.
Do you know Sonia Lee by any chance?
I don't.
Sonia Lee's another one of those. She reminds me a lot of Lucinda, but there's just that soul and that blues quality.
Mm.
And so do you think your quality that you have that you bring to your music is mostly innate, or is it something that you worked on?
I'm terrible at talking about myself, so that kind of stuff. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. It wasn't like, I want to be like this, so I'm going to try really hard to be like this. It just kind of is what it is. I'm still figuring it out, so.
Okay, well, part of that happens to be probably because your dad is Meatloaf.
Yeah.
And so you grew up, one of your songs talks about that you slept in a guitar case.
That's true.
So it was so around you at all times. It must have been, in other words, somewhat within reach.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I don't mean to say that because you come from famous parents or, you know, that there's no easy path. I mean, you have to have the soul.
Are you trying to say it would seem more plausible to her?
It seemed more accessible.
To people who did not grow up in show business families and grew up far away from Hollywood and New York, the idea that someday you could possibly be on television or record an album for a long time seems impossible. You're like, how in the world would I ever get to meet a person who would have the power to do this? Did you feel far away, or did you think, well, this is the family business, and therefore it seems not that I'm taking things for granted, but like this makes sense to me. Because it, in a way, it doesn't make sense to people on the outside. Like, how in the fuck do you get in there?
Eventually
you get in and you realize it's
studio.
Just a fucking business like everything else with art on top of it. But
I guess people would think I'm in there, but I'm not. I'm actually not in there because it's what I always wanted to do. But in a lot of cases, people don't really want to hear from somebody like a famous person's kid. Mm-hmm. You know what
yeah,
I mean? So
yeah.
In essence, it kind of makes it a little bit more difficult.
Right,
sometimes
because they're saying, okay, what does she have to say?
You have to really extra super prove yourself even more.
Yeah,
that
makes
sense.
Because
you're kind of in a shadow.
But you know what I've noticed about show business is all the cocaine. No, it's like...
well, there is that too,
if people don't want to talk to you, and most people don't want to have to talk to you, they will find an excuse not to talk to you. Oh, you're the son of a famous... You're the daughter of a famous person? Oh, well, you're going to feel entitled. Oh, you're a nobody? Well, I'm not going to talk to you. It's like they're always going to find a way to, like, until you force them to listen to you, they always find an excuse.
You really have to have a really very... You always... I mean, whether or not you come from a famous family, you have to have a thick skin. But in my experience, a lot, you have to really have extra thick skin sometimes because people are like, oh, you're Meatloaf's daughter? Yeah. All right. Cool.
Yeah, and if they don't happen to like Meatloaf,
yeah, of course you're a singer. Great, yeah.
Right, and they don't realize that connections aren't everything. And just because you know somebody or anybody doesn't mean anything, really.
And you have talent, but yeah, you don't have to have talent just because your dad has talent.
But you,
right.
Yeah.
But you did tour with your dad for 9 years.
Yes.
And so you must have been quite young at that time.
I started in 94, mm-hmm. So I was 19.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's amazing. So you must have seen...
Well, he made me audition.
Is
I mean,
that
he
right?
He knew. He's my father is very, very competitive and very ultra serious about his show and his performance. The guy who's on stage is it's technically my dad, but that's not dad.
Right.
That's Meatloaf. You know. So he's not gonna let just anyone come on his stage. You know. I couldn't suck and go on his stage.
Your
you know
dad
I mean?
Was very theatrical. It was almost like musical rock opera. I mean, he brought something to the table. It wasn't just music. He had a theatrical performance behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, I mean, when you're saying that, I could see him thinking like, somebody just can't come in and just cut through this. I mean,
yeah.
This is already thought out.
He made me, he said, what would you think about coming to sing with us? And I said, that sounds awesome. And he said, okay, well, we have a gig at Madison Square Garden. We're going to give you a microphone. You can stand on the side of the stage. Here are the songs. Learn all of the backup parts. No help. You have to prove that you can learn them just by listening to the album. And then you can stand on the side where no one can see you and you sing into a microphone and George, the front of house guy, is going to record it and I'm going to listen to it afterward.
Wow. So you auditioned literally at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And at that time, was he singing things like Two Out of Three Ain't Bad? And
yeah, well, it was the Anything for Love tour. So he was doing that song, but he always does Two Out of Three.
Two Out of Three Ain't Bad. I have to say, I want you, I need you, but there ain't no way I'm never going to love you. I'm never going to love you. Don't be sad. Two Out of Three Ain't Bad. And I suggest it's not that great. You know, Two Out of Three.
Like yeah. You're a girl.
I suggest Two Out of Three Ain't That Bad. That's pretty bad to me. You know, you yeah, want me, you need me, but you're not going to love me. What do you want?
That's what a teenage boy or a 25-year-old rock star thinks.
No, but I think that song went deeper. If I'm not mistaken, that song was about that he had his heart broken by a previous love. And he says, I'm not going to do that again because I know what you're saying. You want me to be with you and I'll do that, but I'm not going to do it because it happened before. Am I right?
Very right.
Yes, I am a chick of the 80s. Thank you.
Yes.
You'd be surprised how many people come up to me and say, oh, Two Out of Three, that was your dad. That was my wedding song.
Oh,
and
no,
I'm like,
no, no.
Oh, that's
what?
Great. That's great.
Oh, no, it's
really?
Not a good wedding song.
Good luck
song.
With that.
Well, Bad Out of Hell was one of the biggest selling albums of all time.
Yeah, I think it was, I'm sure it's been knocked out since, but I think it was just under the Eagles' greatest hits for a while.
Well, I have it right here. It sold over 43 million copies and continues to sell an estimated 200,000 copies annually. So it stays on the charts.
Yeah, people love it.
So that must be, it's having an iconic father is what it is.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And does he come and see your shows?
He's seen, well, I started to open for him. So I've sort of, I don't know if he was watching or not, but before I was opening for him and when I was just starting, he came to a couple of them, yeah.
And so when you would go off stage and he's going to come on stage, then you run into him in the backstage locker room and you
not really.
High five, Dad, or what happens
totally.
Then?
We go, yeah, high five, your turn.
I'm saying you're coming off, he's coming on. Yeah. Now your dad has been serious about politics in the last couple of years, and like my father is crazy about politics, but I just ignore that part of him because
me too.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Now my dad's 80 years old now, and so he's like, you know, right wing Republican, and he says nobody's gonna come in and take my gun, and I think, Dad, what do you got, a VCR? You know, nobody's coming in to take anything, but okay, you have a gun.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, like, that has nothing to do with me whatsoever. Do you feel that way about your dad sometimes?
I don't pay attention. I just like music.
But he makes the news.
Yeah.
And so when he makes the news,
because he's loud,
you can't ignore that.
Yeah.
And you just say, oh, Dad.
I can though. I mean, I live in, you know, I can not watch the.
Yeah,
the video clips online.
Of all the people that you can ignore in the news, I think your dad is probably. I mean, just anybody's dad is like nobody's interested. Well, I remember you said before the show, you're like, you know, he endorsed Mitt Romney, and I said, oh, that seems unusual. All these rocks, olding, you know, aging rock stars, him and Ted Nugent, they're endorsing Mitt Romney, and you said, and Christine says to me, well, my dad endorsed Mitt Romney. I'm like, your dad is an 80-year-old accountant from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I'd be amazed if he didn't endorse Mitt Romney.
Right.
Meatloaf is a whole, that's a story. You were like, what? How unusual is that?
But because you also did Bill Clinton's inaugural ball,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I was there. We performed at Clinton's inauguration.
How amazing was that?
It was so rad. Marion Barry fucking rocks.
Marion Barry.
You didn't smoke crack with him.
No, I didn't smoke crack with him, but I did dance with him.
Interesting.
He was up to party, dude.
Is
and
that right?
They got a tattoo later.
That's, was this 92 or 96?
96.
How interesting. Wow, that was his second term then.
Yeah.
That must have been fantastic.
Yeah.
I have a Marion Barry
story. It was
at the
DC Armory.
If you can believe it.
You have a Marion Barry story? I do have a hard time believing that.
Okay. Well,
no,
tell me.
Don't just tease it.
University of Wisconsin, 1986, I'm going to say. Imagine it. Maybe 84. I don't know. I talked my way into, hang on, this takes a long time to get through. I talked my way into a rhetoric class that happens to be taught by the head of the University of Wisconsin English Department. It's all fucking grad students and me. I don't know how the hell I got in. There's like 12 people. Anyhow, this is such a high-end class that a correspondent from Nightline had come into Madison because there was some censorship story and he was going to do the five-minute piece.
Right.
This professor brings this fucking guy in to talk to the 12 people in this class.
Huh.
I, being just a little ballsy and crazy, go up to him after the thing and I say, hey, I write for the school newspaper, which I totally didn't. But I thought if I can get an interview with this guy, I can. So he agrees to meet me and we have an interview and he says, listen, completely off the record, like I had our fucking record, but he's off, the, you know, he somehow Marion Barry, who no one in America had ever heard of, he's like, the mayor of New D.C. is like fucking just a crackhead, and he's totally going down. It's a good 18 months later when it finally happens. I knew
that
Marion Barry was going down for drugs before anybody else, and I had
nothing
to do with
it. You could have put your stamp right on that story. You could have just pulled that forward.
Woodward and Bernstein that to...
Perla Day is here. You do know that, right? Perla Day is here.
No. I want to turn this into a Marion Barry episode.
Hey, I want to ask you.
You say he was ready to party. Was he high at the time or what?
No, I don't think he was high at the time, but he was fun.
Can I tell you what I wish I... Okay, not only do I love music and I would love to be a rock star. Like, that's like my goal in life. I would love to be a rock star. Although I might have to give up that dream as well as Olympic skater. But that's not the point. One of the things I love, though, about rock star are the clothes. So you get to wear like feathers and suede and turquoise and like plunging necklines. And it's just so great, right?
I have this friend of mine, Nina Morgan Jones, who designs all of these fantastic things.
Don't you love that?
Yeah.
And you have such a great little figure that you would be just perfect for all these costumes.
Thanks. I do. I have a suede fringed bell-bottom jumpsuit.
I want a suede fringed bell-bottom jumpsuit.
Like a halter and has a low back. And
I just have to point
out
you just listed like things that rock stars wear, feathers and things. And then you threw in plunging neckline like... Yeah, only rock stars wear that. Every woman in Los Angeles is walking around with a plunging neckline. I don't think it's that unusual. Well, you know.
All right, we're going to hear a song in just a minute. But I wanted to ask you one more thing. Have you written any songs for your son?
Actually, yeah.
And what are the names?
Jim, who's right here, right now.
Yay,
We've written a new album, and we're in the middle of recording it, and... One of the songs is called Revel Young. That's my son's name.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really good.
When I think of the song Hey Jude, I think that Paul McCartney wrote that song for Julian Lennon, as I understand, when his parents were going through a divorce. And here's this song, Hey Jude, that like is about this kid, and like he'll live with that. I guess maybe it doesn't mean anything to him. I suppose it doesn't. But like to think that a rock anthem could become about you, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your son is so little.
So your
now.
Song has to be as good as Hey Jude. I think this is what
that's
we're what saying.
That's exactly what I'm getting
the
at.
The pressure is on.
We could try to play it for you tonight if you want.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Now, did your son, he's too little now. He's still a baby because he's not even two yet. But like my daughter, when I try to sing for her or play guitar for her, she says, Mama, you know, no more, Mama. Like she's over me.
Yeah, I get looks. Yeah. I sing in the kitchen and I'll sing to him and... You know, if I'm singing too loudly, he'll look at me like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right, right.
What is wrong with
Isn't
you?
That funny?
He's not even two, but he gives me that look like,
But maybe
really?
your dad did that with you. Maybe your dad was singing and maybe you were giving him that look.
All the time.
Is that right?
And my dad, his voice is so loud that if...
I could just see him in the kitchen. I would do anything. Dad? And he's just, shut up.
and I just said, what's for dinner, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's amazing. It's exciting because you're going to bring your son up in the atmosphere you were brought up with. It's art and it's music and it's talent and it's all around them. And so you're giving him the tools that maybe he'll, who knows?
He has a drum. Grandpa gave him a drum kit for his Christmas. So.
Oh, that's a laugh. Has he been banging?
All the time. He likes Kiss, The Beatles, and AC/DC, so we're doing good.
Nice.
That is so awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Where do you think music is heading? I mean, the rock record companies are one thing, and then the... But, you know, like, I think to myself, like, what if you could just get on Rock Band? Like, can't you get on a video game? Would that be... Like, is that a... That seems like people that are on video games, like guitar rock and, you know... Those songs,
Rockstar, yeah,
those songs. But they reach so
songs.
Many millions of people.
Yeah, but they're established...
Is your dad on any of those?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so, but I could be wrong. I'm not
sure. It's just interesting the outlets in which music leads now.
It's oddly enough in a hunting game where they shoot Democrats who come up out of a pond.
No, but it is totally different, right? It's not just albums or CDs, and it's not that anymore. Now you're doing podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right on. Okay, hey, man, I'm just throwing it out there. All right, you guys, so stay tuned because we're going to hear right now from Pearl a Day.
One, two, three, four.
Come on down, my baby. Come on down tonight. Who would want to think that all this time we've been living a lie? I remember all the parts we used to play, and I remember how you made me feel my shame. Give me time to shake it off my shoulders. I've been dying to wake you for a smile. Oh, come on down, my baby. Come on down tonight. Come on down and make everything alright. I want you to see me. trying to hide. Who would want to think that all this time we've been living a lie? I remember all the songs we used to sing. I remember all the joy you used to bring. Give me time to shake it off my shoulders. I've been dying to wake you for a smile. Oh, come on down, my baby. Come on down tonight. Come on down and make everything alright. I want you to see me. I'm so sick and tired. Climbing out these walls I'm closed behind. We've been living a told me what you were feeling on the side. And if you told me, girl, I gotta catch this flight. Don't I know that nothing lasts forever? But don't take it all and leave me here to die. My baby, come on down tonight. Come on down and make everything alright. I want you to see me. I ain't trying to hide. Who would want to think that all this time? Who would want to think that all this time? We've been living a lie. We've been living a lie. We've been living a lie. We've been living a lie.
Wow, Perla Day, you are the real deal.
Thank you.
I mean, you're standing here in my house, and then this voice comes out of you. I mean, you can't make that up. Nobody can give that to you.
Right, and we are actually at her feet, right? I want to point out. We have fallen to our knees. We are at her feet.
We have landed at her feet.
Yes.
No, but it's true, and it kind of reminds me, just to come out of rock for a second, but Oprah Winfrey ran a marathon, and I remember saying to myself, nobody...
The fuck are you talking about?
I'm talking about nobody could make Oprah Winfrey run 26 miles. She ran 26 miles. Perla Day, she could have a famous father. It doesn't matter. She's got
right.
it in her soul.
Right.
And she comes up here and it just comes out of this tiny little body.
I know. Musicians always amaze me like that because, again, to me, a totally foreign language. So
you have
so much soul. Jim with the guitar,
yeah,
it's like, oh,
Jim
my God.
It's amazing.
It's like, I'm always like, well, this won't sound like a record because I'm sitting right here 2 feet away and it sounds like a record. I don't understand how
and
it's possible.
Not only that, but that song, it's like everybody's singing with you on the third,
yeah,
the third
that
time
was awesome.
You
yeah,
come
absolutely.
On down. Everybody's with you. We're all singing.
Awesome.
Honest doesn't even sing.
I know. I was, yeah, we'll have to edit that
now,
out.
Now that song.
Come on down.
Is that a Little Immaculate White Fox?
No, that's from their new album that we're recording now.
That's the brand new album.
Yeah.
And the Swing House Sessions, that was, what was that?
That was all songs from Little Immaculate White Fox, but we did them live and acoustic at the Swing House Studios.
And is
Hollywood.
That where I saw you do Wish You Were Here? Did you do?
No, Wish You Were Here I did three times. We did a few times, but I did that with me and Scott and Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains. And one time, Lars Ulrich joined us.
That is a beautiful.
We do that in tribute to Dimebag Daryl Abbott, who was our friend, and he was killed.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful rendition that you do.
Thanks.
I mean, usually, obviously, you hear that from Pink Floyd, and you hear the male version singing it, and then when you sing it, it's not just a cover. It's just, it sounds like you're doing it for the first time it's ever been done.
Thanks. For me, it's thrilling because I share it with Jerry, so I get to sing with Jerry Cantrell, which is really fantastic.
I can't even imagine. Right. And so the new album, what is the goal, to drop it when?
Oh, we're right in the middle of recording it. So
good use of the proper term, drop, by the way.
Thank you, honey.
So you're still recording right now. You don't know when the drop date will be. Will it be on a Tuesday? Because I know everything drops on Tuesday. It's all I know. It's all I know.
Honest, you know what's so funny? Is a lot of people drop their podcasts on Mondays. And so I was thinking to myself recently that maybe we should start dropping Storyworthy like on a Wednesday just to completely fuck everything up. You know what I mean?
Wow. We are rebels. We're going to turn this podcast industry
on
its ear. Wait, there's
translate.
No industry.
That's the thing. My dream of being a rock star does not translate, Hannes. It doesn't translate.
But being a pod star. Ooh, I just created a new term, pod star. Copyright me. I just made that up.
All right, listen, pod the star. New album that you're
I'm
working
sorry,
on.
Are you still here? Good Lord, we're Hi. Talking about bullshit. Go ahead.
Pearl of Day, the new album, you do or you don't have a title for it yet?
We don't have a title for the album yet.
Do you usually, or do you think about going with maybe the title song? I mean, like, well, no, now a little Immaculate White Fox, one of your title songs was Rock Child and Mama.
Yes.
Okay, so those weren't Little Immaculate White Fox.
Little Immaculate White Fox is that's actually a really good story in itself.
And
that
what
title,
is that?
What it came from. Well, I have it tattooed on my arm right here. But,
oh, wow.
Because it was actually kind of my first official, non-official first name. So my mom, I was born just outside of Woodstock. And
wow, your history in rock and roll goes crazy deep, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really?
Just outside of Woodstock, and my mother was very, very, very pregnant with me, and her best friend, Marty Bailey, whom she's still friends with, called her up and said, "I just had a dream about your baby. She has blonde hair and blue eyes, and in my dream, she was lying at the base of a tree in a green forest wrapped in white fox fur, and her name is Pearl, Pearl, Pearl," and it kept, no, sorry, her name was Little Immaculate White Fox, Little Immaculate White Fox, and it kept being repeated, and it was this little blonde blue hair. My mom said, "Well, that's really beautiful, but I'm having a boy." Because
oh, no.
she always felt, and I have diaries from my mom that she kept when she was pregnant that, you know, she referred to me as he the
yeah.
entire time.
Yeah.
And then after that call, a few hours later, she went into labor and she had a blonde-haired, blue-eyed little girl. And so she knew she wanted to call me Pearl after Janice. But that's sort of my first non-official.
She could have named you Fox, and that would have been
Foxy
another.
Would be a cool name,
that's
too.
That's a cool name. Now, I understand your father, your real father, was the drummer in Janis Joplin's
band.
Well,
it's semantics, I know, but I'm very particular about it because I call him my biological father because I never really known him.
Right.
So I look like him. But my real dad is Meatloaf.
Yes. His name is Michael,
and as a man,
right?
Yeah,
he's the only father I've ever had.
It's like, yeah, the guy who raised you is your dad.
It's the only dad I ever
that.
Known.
I'm just talking
no, I'm not
in terms
offended
of like
at
her
all.
Genetics and like the music that's in you. I mean,
His name is Clark, and Clark Pearson. He was the drummer for Janis Joplin's Full Tilt Boogie Band.
Wow.
He's actually on the back cover of the Pearl album.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, either way, your father or your dad, they both have this musical genius in them, and then they create you.
Yeah, I'm half drummer.
That's very funny.
Good rhythm.
Well, so. Get out.
I think next time you should have Jim Wilson on your show because Jim
Wilson, by the way, how did you meet
a
him?
Remarkable human. Yeah.
How did you meet him?
I met Jim
at a hat store, at a jaunty hat store.
I met Jim through Scott, through my husband, because you and Scott were friends, right? You knew each other because Jim used to play, was in the Rollins band. He played with Henry Rollins.
Wow.
And I think that's how you knew Scott, right? So when I started dating Scott in 2000, he said, Mother Superior is playing. We have to go see them, which is Jim's band, was Jim's band for a long time. And so we went to see them at the Viper Room, I think, was the first time I met you. And
do you have any stories that take place in a mall? I just want to know. You're like getting some froyo at the Burbank Media Center,
like,
and somebody we've never heard of says something to you. Does that ever happen? Apparently not.
No, they all end up getting tattoos.
Yeah, I know.
They
it always ends up. So I'm getting froyo, and Mark Twain comes out of his grave and says, "How you doing?"
But Jim Wilson is the kind of guy. He's the rock and roll kind of guitar player. It's in his soul. I mean, it's not about the chords he's playing.
He has a song on his new album called "I Need Music in My Life." Let It Run Through You. It's his love song to music.
I was just talking
with his wife about, and she was saying, this is what Jim was born to do.
All right. What's his website? How do we get a hold of Jim Wilson?
He's right here.
Well, I know. So, Jim Wilson, tell me, how do we get a hold of you? Just give him a call. I love that. No, but there is something about musicians. I mean, it's one thing to play a chord, and it's another thing to make it sound like not like just a chord. I mean, anybody can put their fingers there that strumming sound, but how can you make that translate into...
There's a difference, I think, between wannabes and have-to-bes.
Yeah, right?
Yes. I was having this discussion earlier today about music and compared to comedy, and it's like anybody can learn to tell a joke. That's not the same thing as being funny. And anybody can learn to hold a tune, and that's not the same thing as singing. Mm-mm. It's not the same thing. It's like, yeah, if you can be talked out of it, you shouldn't do it.
No. Well, you are the real deal, Pearl, and yeah. I can't thank you enough for coming tonight. Really, it means so much
thank
to me.
Thank you for having us.
Because I'm such a huge rock fan, and this has just been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I'd like to thank Jorge Reyes. He's the sound engineer, and he's over there with the biggest smile I've ever seen that guy with, Hannes. Am I right? Apparently, he's not into the storytelling as much as the rock and roll. That's what I'm getting.
Well, we finally, had something worthy of his recording talents.
Apparently.
You and I making, bullshitting each other is not exactly a tough assignment, but this was like, I can mix this. It's awesome.
All right, you guys. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, he wrote the theme song Follow Me. He's with Cowboy Mouth and he tours all the time. John Thomas Griffith. Yeah, he's amazing. And of course, on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Pearl Adey and Jim Wilson. And of course, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.